Welcome to Get Up in the Cool, old-time music with Cameron DeWitt and friends. This week's friend is Matt Brown, old-time fiddler, educator, and producer. I'm going to cut to the chase. I'm releasing this now because Matt Brown produced a wonderful new album called On Big Shoulders, and there's a Kickstarter. I'm hoping that after listening to our interview and jam, you'll be convinced that On Big Shoulders is something worth checking out and supporting. After Matt and I recorded this, we listened to the whole album together, and you guys, it's so artfully done. It's the only Americana music I've heard in a long time that's really rooted in tradition. The whole album is a love letter to Chicago's music. It really makes me wish that more old-time fiddlers were producers, because Matt's musical wisdom and values are just so beautifully applied. The whole thing is really impressive, and I know these days you get bombarded with crowdfunding requests, but this one deserves to make it through, so stick around afterward for more details. But first, here's my jam and chat with Matt Brown. Enjoy. Very good. Fire on the Mountain. Matt Brown, welcome to Get Up in the Cool.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for having me in your little music study slash DVD and book library.
Yeah, we got one of everything in here.
Yeah. Very good. So somehow I got a hold of your CD and I started listening to it. And yeah, it's very, very good. And then I put it together that Matt Brown is the same Matt Brown as you. And I didn't know anything about the old town school folk music, but generally, whenever it was brought up, your name was also brought up, like, at the same time. So I was like, did this guy make the old town school folk music? I didn't know it was, like, 60 years old or something.
Yeah, in a week or two, it'll be the 60th anniversary of the old town
That's
school.
Amazing.
So I did not make it.
Yeah.
I'm 33, and I don't have a time machine.
Yeah.
Nor am I a Benjamin Button. Yeah.
The 33-year-old Matt Brown does not.
Right, the 73-year-old.
When you're a doc.
Exactly.
When you're Doc Brown.
Exactly.
So then I started asking around. I was like, what's, like, Matt Brown's relationship with the old school
the Old Town School of Folk Music, and this is what I heard. Matt Brown has a fiddle cult.
Whoa.
at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and they meant it in a positive way.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, very much, yeah. So, any of that wrong that I didn't correct myself, or like, that's some little details. That's what I've heard about you. That's a lot of like lead up.
Hey, I'll take it. Cult has a dangerous connotation,
right.
But you know, in the benign connotation, if it means that I'm helping people play fiddle a little more like they want to, then great.
Yeah.
I also hadn't heard of the Old Town School when I lived in Pennsylvania until the last year or two. I'd been doing some touring, solo touring, trying to be a solo old time musician in the mold of Bruce Molsky and Mike Seeger, and then someone like Tim O'Brien when he doesn't take a band with him. So I'd sing and play some banjo and guitar as well as playing fiddle, and I would travel around. And the romantic partner of someone I knew heard that I was going to be traveling through Chicago and said, oh, you got to go check out this place, the Old Town School. And I was maybe 24 or 25 years old. Growing up on the East Coast, before then, it had never been a matter of conversation. But then I get here and it's an institution.
Yeah.
And it's been around, like we said a minute ago, for almost 60 years, you know, 59 years and 51 weeks at this point.
How?
It was started by a bunch of progressive, socially active musical types who... there were a couple of reasons for the starting of it, and there's actually a podcast being put out by the Old Town School right now that they launched the first episode of a 6-part series about the founding of the school.
That's awesome.
And then up to the modern era that just launched last night, November
Very cool.
23rd. So people can go listen to all about that. But it was a collection of at least 4 people, but also Big Bill Brunzi was involved, the blues musician, in taking some of the ideas of like Pete Seeger's work, but also Bess Lomax Hawes was doing communal music teaching and making out on the West Coast, and that was brought here. And it was also a way for touring musicians who weren't on the road to have work between tours, and it became this communal music making event for normal people in Chicago who wanted to be more creative. And it's been around ever since, and it's had successes and times of trouble. But now we have 3 buildings in 2 different neighborhoods and thousands of students every week.
That's amazing.
Of all ages. So
that's so cool. I wish every city had one. Have you ever thought about like whatever the church planting equivalent is of like evangelizing your Old Town School brand and like sending it out to other cities?
For sure. I mean, if I had an administrative role, I would probably have already tried to plant a couple flags elsewhere.
Yeah.
There are some great institutions that are smaller throughout the country. Swallowhill Music is, I think, the best example in Denver, but also Jalopy in Red Hook.
Right.
And the Freight and Salvage out in the Bay Area. And Club Passim has a very small music school, but they have one.
Yeah.
I think the Old Town School model is great in that we actually get more revenue from the teaching than from the performance side, even though our concert series is incredibly robust. That's just how big our education department is, that it actually brings in more revenue than the concerts. But it's both a concert venue and a music school.
Well, that makes sense. I feel like this music is so participatory that usually like everyone in an audience is also to some extent a musician.
Right.
It's like...
And the school's scope is broad enough that it's not just old time music. And even though folk is in the title, it's not all folk music in the ethnomusicologist's sense. We teach a lot of commercial music, but at this point we're teaching a lot of commercial music from 50 years ago. We don't yet have a program to teach modern like pop music or the most successful commercial music. So they're teaching in the guitar program, they're teaching Beatles songs and, Sam Cooke songs and Grateful Dead, and we have ensembles for all that. The fiddle and banjo playing is a part of what we do, but not a majority of what we do.
Right.
So I'm part of a kind of a smaller branch within the school of people teaching traditional music, but it's an honor to be a part of it, because it's been going on for years, and there have been remarkable people who've passed through, both as students and as teachers at various points. And yeah. There's a lot of institutional wisdom there.
Cool. Well, we got a lot of tuning to do, so maybe we should embark on that and play another tune before I ask you some more questions.
Great. Let's do it. Did it.
So the first time I heard Lone Prairie was the recording of John Beekhoff and Nate Payne. Have you seen this video series? It's like these two twin fiddlers, and they're like on a field. I think sometimes they're by a lake.
No, I haven't.
I think he's like a Vermont or like maybe Ithaca fiddler, John Beekhoff, but he died recently. But there was this like series that came out pretty recently of a bunch of his fiddling. But they play this tune for like 7 minutes, and it's definitely the same tune, but it's also not. It's in like D minor and F major.
Whoa.
So it's like, it has the same kind of phrase lengths, but it's pretty clearly like in a different scale.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's like the history. Do you know the history of this tune, or like?
Yeah, it's a ballad about a dying cowboy, bury me not on the lone prairie. Bruce Mulsky recorded a vocal version of it that was inspired by the Fields Ward version. And Fields Ward was, I hope this is right, Fields Ward was the nephew of Wade Ward. And Wade Ward, so the way I play it and the way we're going to try it in a minute is the way Wade Ward played it on the fiddle. And he recorded it solo fiddle in, I forget if he played it in A or G, but cross-tuning it sounded like to me. And so I learned it as faithfully as I could to record it on the album that I then called Lone Prairie. But it's an instrumental version of a ballad, Bury Me Not on the Lone Prairie, which Fields Ward was one of a number of people who sang it. I don't know where those gentlemen got it.
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe they just made that version up. They're like, this would be cool in D minor, or, you know, I have no idea, but
there sure are a lot of tunes. I feel like I'm discovering more of them every day that were obviously songs.
Right.
And then for whatever reason, people also like to play them. They thought the melody was beautiful enough on its own or evocative enough on its own. The story that I've heard with Wade Ward is that he had a case of the whooping cough when he was a boy that took away his singing voice.
Huh.
He could speak, but he played a couple of tunes, really great renditions of tunes that people usually sing. So this being one of them, but also Shady Grove.
Yeah.
He has an incredible banjo version of Shady Grove that has a weird, crooked form that I think like he had the liberty to make it a crooked instrumental tune because he wasn't going to sing it.
Right.
So.
Cool.
You know, out of limitations can come innovation.
Yeah, folk music, good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That makes so much sense. I always thought when I heard this original recording, which really is like the same tune, like it's just with a different scale, but like I always thought, man, this sounds like a song.
Yeah.
And I never did any research, so I'm glad to hear this now that there are words. I'll have to check those out too.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, when you're ready. Thank you. Man, what a cool tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how the form is so short.
Yeah.
And there's only one part.
Yeah.
I never get tired of it.
Right.
Like, I could have played that for a lot longer. And, like, yeah. It's funny how, like, how that works sometimes.
And that form is just once through the verse. We were talking about how it's a song.
Yeah.
That's just the melody for one verse. And, you know. Yeah. With songs like that you can conceivably just keep adding more lyrics, so it could go on forever.
Yeah. Very good. Cool tune.
Yeah.
Cool tune. Let's go ahead and tune and get ready for this next one. We're going to do the Marcus Martin Polly Put the Kettle On.
Yeah, man.
It's one of my very favorite recordings.
Awesome.
And I love how it sounds on... is this one on Speed of the Plow?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Greg Reisch on guitar. He came up with this incredible guitar part, fingerstyle, I think. He did a variety of different guitar styles on that record.
I loved his interpretation of... When I listened to the original, I was like, how would one chord this?
Yeah.
Because it seems to me like it's going back and forth between G major, G minor, and sometimes it sounds like he's straight up playing a B flat chord.
Mm-hmm.
The tonality is one of the most ambiguous tonalities I've ever heard in, like, an old-time tune. But I love your guys' version of it. It's really, really cool.
Thanks.
It's beautiful. Yeah. How did you, like, decode? I've heard a bunch of people play this tune.
Oh, really?
Or I've heard a handful of people play it, but everyone plays it pretty differently.
Hmm.
And I sometimes wonder if that's out of necessity for, like, what do I do? How do I decode, like... some of these notes, like, how did you, maybe this is a good time for you to tell people, how do you, like, learn tunes? What's your, like, learning tunes process?
I just put on the track and just play it obsessively until I can play it exactly like the source. And then after that, I get to play it the way I want to.
But gotcha.
I'm a big believer in the importance of being able to imitate a master artist in order to understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then use whatever tools from that to find your own expression.
Yeah.
It's very easy to learn like 40 to 60%
right.
of something and then leave out the other, you know, the remainder. And it's understandable, but some of the most interesting parts of the music, I think, gets lost in that regard. And so for me, since I was in the mid-teenage years, I would just put on, like, that was the era when we had CDs as the main vehicle for listening to music that had been played at some other time prior. We had a CD player at home that had a loop button. You couldn't loop a section, but you could loop a track.
Yeah.
And so I remember just sitting in our living room there in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and looping whatever tune it was. And it was, at that time, it was mostly musicians who were performing, you know, in that era. So, like, Bruce Molsky, Brad Leftwich, Rafe Stefanini, Dirk Powell, Bruce Green, Raina Gellert, some of my favorite fiddle players, Kirk Sutphin. The list is longer than that. But then when they started directing me, you know, I'd maybe take a workshop with them. They'd say, oh, you've got to check out Wade Ward or John Salyer or Edin Hammons. I would then do the same thing with those recordings. And so with Marcus Martin, it's the same deal. And that was true when I was 15, and now when I'm twice that age. I do occasionally, as a teacher, or if I'm being asked to, like, transcribe something for publication, I'll use a tool like the Amazing Slowdowner, which really is amazing.
Yeah.
Because then I can slow it down to, you know, 20% and just loop a little section and get really confident that this is the sequence of notes.
Yeah.
I don't know that I ever did that with this tune, but for some, where it's either the recording quality is really bad or the original recording's really fast, I might endeavor to do that just to save time.
Yeah, totally. Instead of just spending, today I'm just going to loop this old recording forever and just keep playing it.
Which is a great way to spend a Tuesday.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes you don't have that time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right on. Let's play this tune. And then I think I should probably ask you, like, how you got into this music in the first place and your Pennsylvania roots, but let's play this tune. And that's what I'm going to ask you afterwards.
Great.
I'm making a mental note.
I'll start making up my answers.
Yeah. Okay.
One, two.
Ready?
Go.
Someday I'm going to be able to just like relax and play that tune. Like, it's like I feel like I'm on the entire time, like B flat, B natural, F flat, F natural, F sharp. Like, I'm always just like, it's not the easiest tune to play on the banjo. I don't know how it lays on the fiddle.
It's, you know, there are easier tunes on the fiddle, but I think it's more of a fiddle tune than a banjo tune. Uh-huh. And I think you did a fabulous
job.
Thank
you.
That was terrific.
Man, Polly Put the Kettle On. Is that, why is that named that? It doesn't sound anything like Molly Put the Kettle On.
I was afraid you were going to ask me that. I have no idea.
Okay.
I have absolutely no idea.
Matt Brown is an expert of old time music.
No.
We'll have like, you know, hate mail or whatever, and I'll send it on to you.
Yeah, please send it to the Old Town School.
Yeah. So how did you get into playing old time music in the first place? Sounds like you got it started in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
I did, yeah. So my father, Tim Brown, was a banjo player like yourself in his 20s, and then he and my mom had me in their 30s. And by that point, my dad was playing music in a string band around home. He had a day job and as did all of his bandmates, but they would play for local square dances in Chester County and I think some in Lancaster County, and also, you know, pet weddings and and various social events where people wanted live music. And it was before old time music was really hip, but around that area there were lots of people who wanted, you know, down home music or, you know, just authentic sounding music on string instruments, string band instruments. So I apparently showed an affinity for the violin at about 3.5 years old, and at the age of 4 started Suzuki violin lessons, learning classical music on the instrument. But as soon as I could play a couple of the most basic pieces that they teach in that method, I started learning, I think with great encouragement from my dad, started learning very simple versions of the classic old-time jam session tunes, Old Joe Clark and Cluck Old Hen and Cripple Creek and some of those, and played old-time music whenever I was compelled to do so by my loving father, who was excited to have another musician in the house. And then the time when I really got passionate about it was when I first went off to one of these week-long immersion camps. And for me, it was the Swannanoa Gatherings Old Time Week, which I attended when I was maybe 14. My mom took me. My dad stayed home. And my mom went off and was a tourist in and around Asheville, North Carolina, and did all the sightseeing during the day. And I took classes with, I remember Raina Gellert was there that year. Brad Leftwich was definitely there, because we had actually begun an email correspondence with him ahead of time and sent him some demos of me playing some old-time tunes, and he gave some really thoughtful and critical feedback that helped inspire me. And just having that experience of spending 5 days with people whose CDs we listened to back home, them teaching these classes, but then I had some jam sessions with some of them and got to eat meals, share meals with them. And then the student concert at the end of the week, my backup band was John Herman, Tom Sauber, and Meredith McIntosh. And we played Elzik's Farewell. I had learned it pretty much verbatim off of the Primitive Characters album. That was a great band in that era. I guess they were from upstate New York. I hope that's right. And from that moment on, I was sold on old-time music. And
would you say it's because that's when you first had an idea of what the community could be like?
Well, I had a sense of the community because my dad was heavily involved in our local community.
Right.
But I guess it hadn't registered for me that I could be involved in the bigger community.
Yeah.
And also be interacting with and eventually playing with some of the best musicians in the music. Not that I was that good, but I was good enough that I didn't embarrass myself. I could sit in a jam with them, or they were willing to be seen having lunch with me. Maybe it was out of sympathy, but regardless, that they would let me hang out with them as a teenager. I was like, this is really cool. Here are the people who are some of the best in the scene at it, and they're willing to let me tag along. And soon thereafter, we started hosting some house concerts and concerts in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And I remember the one that made the biggest difference for me was Bruce Molsky came and did a workshop, knowing Bruce, it was probably a fiddle workshop for a little while, and then a banjo workshop, and then in the evening gave a concert, did his solo show, singing, playing, telling stories. It was amazing. And it was at that point that I thought, well, maybe if I learned some banjo and some guitar and started singing again, I'd sung in a choir as a boy, but not through my voice change. I thought, maybe I could do what he's doing, and maybe I could make a living doing that, and that sure sounds more fun than working in an office, which is what each of my parents were doing at that time.
Has it been more fun?
I don't really have anything to compare it to.
Because you haven't worked in an office.
I haven't really worked. I
you have your whole life ahead of you.
I could still work in an office. I did a little bit of office work, and I will admit to all of those who are listening that playing old-time music, at least for me, has been more fun than working in an office.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. I remember it was before I went to my first Clifftop. I went to the Nashville Clawhammer Camp.
Oh, cool. Megan Lynch's camp?
Yeah. I went to that with Adam Hurd and Brad Leftwich.
Awesome.
Was there. And Leroy Troy was there. And Tyler Andel was there. And John Balch was there, who makes all these fabulous tunes. He makes great banjo tunes, but also these goat and calfskin heads. But I remember like feeling like, wow, this is amazing that I'm like allowed to drink a beer with Brad Lefwich, you know, and that like that's something really cool about this music is that you get to like, you know, interact with your like heroes, you know? And I think that's pretty unique that there's no like VIP room.
Yeah. Well, there's so few P that there can't be that
many VIP.
It's a small world.
So, I think that was like when I started getting myself getting an idea. Like, I think I had a similar experience, you know, and just like, I was, you know, older, but I wish I had gotten into this music earlier. But
hey, you're here now.
I'm here now.
You never have to leave. You might have to leave this house, but you don't have to leave the music. You are welcome in the music. Let me be the first to welcome you. The second, it sounds like.
Right on. What was the next one? Pinewood Scout.
Oh yeah, that's a great tune.
Okay. Let me get back out of modal real quick.
Awesome.
My family's so goddamn tired of hearing me hum that.
Do they all live around here? Is that why you're in town?
No, we're just in town visiting my friend Ashley, who is childhood friends with my wife.
Oh, cool.
So my wife and I and our son are here and visiting Ashley and then some other college friends from Boston flew in too. So we're just like having a Friendsgiving.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, this is my third time in Chicago. First time was when I moved to Philly. I drove over, and then I came back for the Singing Stomp on Labor Day. Yeah, so I played at that and recorded Chirp Smith.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun.
He's amazing.
Yeah. And instantly disarming and just charming and jolly, I would almost say.
Yep, there's so many words that describe Chirps. Ebullient.
Yes. Thank you. Tiny Woods Gal. Mm-hmm. So, we have one tune left, but before we play that one more tune, which is probably my favorite one.
Oh, really?
Out of, like, both of your albums, Lone Prairie and Speed of the Plow.
Nice.
Is this tune, Hog Went Through the Fence.
Awesome.
This is such a cool tune.
It really is.
I don't think I've ever heard that before. Where's it from?
It's from Luther Strong.
Okay.
Kentucky fiddle player.
Right on. So I'm very excited to play that. But first, tell us about your albums. And you have some like fiddle lesson albums as well.
I have one of those. Yeah.
One of them. Okay, great.
So back in 2005, I recorded that album you've mentioned a couple times and that has Hog Went Through the Fence on it. It's called Lone Prairie. And it has Paul Brown playing every conceivable style of old-time banjo, mm-hmm. and Beverly Smith singing beautifully and playing guitar. And then after that, I made a record. Well, I made that fiddle lesson CD that you mentioned,
yeah.
Because I was beginning to teach, and my dad thought it was a good idea to have an instructional album out there, and it's called Old Time Fiddle Lesson Volume 1, a very hopeful title.
Yeah.
and then after that, I was starting to do some solo touring, and so I made a record that was just me. It's called Falls of Richmond. And I play that tune on the fiddle and some others on the banjo and the guitar, and I sing a little bit. After that, I made a record called My Native Home, which had some solo material, some fiddle music, but also collaborations with Ben Krakauer, who's an amazing banjo player, Mark Schatz on bass, Brittany Haas on fiddle, and Tim O'Brien sang harmony to me on two songs and then played guitar on the Stambo Waltz. And then the record that we've mentioned a couple times with Greg Riesch is the newest with my name on it, Speed of the Plow. Even more recently, this band that I play with in Chicago called Big Sadie put out its first record, and that was just in May. The album's called Keep Me Waiting, although by putting it out, we don't keep people waiting anymore. So it's self-defeating title, but a really, really fun band. Three of my best friends in town are my bandmates. It's led by this couple, Colin and Elise, and our friend Andy plays banjo. That's more of a bluegrass feel with some country influences, but it's acoustic instruments, and both Elise and I have strong affiliations for old-time music, and Colin grew up with old-time music, and Andy loves it too. Okay. So
it's okay. We have some bluegrass curious listeners.
Great, yeah. So people who are willing to hear someone play with picks on their fingers in terms of the banjo player. And I guess I play fiddle solos on every single track, so
right
that's
on.
Really fun for me to get to do that on a recording for the first time.
How should people find all of these recordings?
The simplest place to start is probably my website, which is unfortunately not myname.com or mattbrown.com.
That would make sense.
It's brownsdream.us.
That's very good.
Brownsdream. US. Yes. Well, I don't feel like a commercial entity, but I do feel like I live in the United States. And Brown's
We're
Dream
all
is
feeling
a,
it
is
right
a fiddle
now.
Tune. Yeah. Yeah.
Feeling hard.
But if you just search for like Matt Brown fiddle or something of that ilk, you'll stumble across
brownsdream.us.
Oh, cool.
And you came up. Yeah.
Nice.
So.
There was another Matt Brown who played Western swing music, I think, on the fiddle. And then the other Matt Browns tend to be mixed martial artists. So if that's more your jam, there are lots of YouTube videos, I think, and some websites too.
Very good. Cool. Brownsdream.us.
Yeah.
Very good. I'll include all of the links. You just tap around on your phone till you've bought and subscribed to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the exciting upcoming thing is a record I produced called On Big Shoulders that features a bunch of Chicago musicians, including Elise from Big Sadie. She sings harmony on a couple songs. An Americana record, electric guitars and drums and bass and pedal steel. That'll be coming out in 2018. So there's already a website for that, onbigshoulders.com. And
cool.
Social media for all of that, and that's where a lot of my artistic energy is shifting to production work.
Cool.
Which is super exciting, so people can look out for that.
Very cool. Well, yeah, it's been really lovely to play these tunes with you, and
likewise
to get to like finally hear your story. To know that you're not a cult leader, you're just someone who's facilitating people doing this really awesome thing, which is playing the fiddle and playing old-time music. And yeah, I think it's really, I think the scene in Chicago, the few times that I've been out here, it seems to be very diverse in the traditional music, and it's very robust, and that's really, really cool, and I want to see more of that. I hope more people follow your example and just create their own fiddle and banjo and old time music communities.
That's a bit nicer C word. Yeah. And the way I see it is the Old Town School is a great way to make the spirit of Swannanoa or yeah. the Clawhammer Camp or Ashokan or Augusta, those week-long fiddle tunes, those week-long or weekend experiences. The Old Town School allows us to do that 48 weeks of the year, and we all get a little bit more sleep.
Yes.
But I host a monthly old time jam, and there are dances and workshops around town, not yeah. just at the Old Town School. So if anyone likes this kind of music and is coming through Chicago, let us know, and there's probably something awesome going on any particular day.
Right on. Well, let's get to A and play that Hogwin Through the Fence.
Awesome.
All right, Matt, thanks so much for being on the show. Had a really good time, and I'm excited to play this tune.
Me too. Thanks for having me, Cameron. Yeah. 1, 2, ready, go.
Go support the On Big Shoulders Kickstarter. It's linked in the show notes on your podcatching device, as well as this episode's post on my website and on Get Up in the Cool's Facebook page and group. There's one Kickstarter reward where Matt will take you out to dinner, and he promises the evening will be, and I quote, filled with scintillating conversation. So if you pledge at that amount, I'm going to need a full report. But if you don't spring for that, there's a lot of other neat rewards, like screen-printed mugs, t-shirts, and, of course, copies of the record in both compact disc format and vinyl.
Oh, and share this episode with friends in case any of them might support the cause. When you finish doing that, go peruse onbigshoulders.com and Matt's website, brownsdream.us, where you can find all his other projects, his recordings, and his show schedule. If you want to support Get Up in the Cool and get exclusive rewards like on-air shoutouts, access to the Get Up in the Cool tune archive, online banjo workshops, and weekly bonus tracks, go to CameronDeWitt.com and click the button that says Patreon, then choose a support level that works for you and get that extra stuff. This week's bonus track, by the way, is especially good. Matt and I play Kennedy Rag, a tune that Matt describes as a little slimy. Huge thanks and internet hugs from my newest Patreon supporters, Rach Krause and Ryan Navy. Also, Gil McNeil, thanks for raising your Patreon pledge and enjoy your bonus tracks. There's like 80 of them, so go binge listen. That's all for now, friends. Thanks for listening. Come back same time next week to Get Up in the Cool.